Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome, and thank you for your support.
Thank you
very much.
We're still in the world. If you've listened to the most recent episode on the normal pod,
you'll
know that there's a man outside Henry's flat steam washing the floor.
He's trying to steam wash the ground.
The ground.
London's ground.
Yeah.
So we're talking, you know, we're going back to sort of pre-Roman filth. He's trying to clean it all out.
Do you reckon he'd clean straight through a mosaic if you found one?
I think he would. He wouldn't care.
So that's just to explain the potential. I will try and get rid of it in post.
Sorry about that.
We might have to replace Henry with an actor.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Happy to. Happy to create work.
What a month it's been.
What a month.
What a month. And on the topic of water, there's something that you don't want on your head when you're camping. And I'm going to...
You do want it in your mouth.
But you do want it in your mouth. Do stay hydrated, guys and girls, if you're out there while camping.
And do get it across your armpits and around your arsehole occasionally if you're camping.
Stay hydrated, wash if you're camping. I've got a I'm gonna try a new thing out now. It's called a minidote. And that is an anecdote that I can tell which comes in under 15 seconds.
Okay, shall I set the clock?
Yeah.
Give me a sec. Okay, timer, stopwatch, timer, 15 seconds. Okay, tell me when you're ready.
And go. I once went camping with my friend William. He told me that his tent was completely waterproof and that he tested it by pouring a bucket of water onto the tent and it was dry inside, completely waterproof. We then went to the campsite. Everyone else had a thing called fly nets. He insisted we didn't need a fly net. He was wrong. We both got completely soaked.
That's
it's
right
a minute
on 15.
Mini dose. Extraordinary.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I went to the cold, hard facts of the story.
You did, yeah. I much preferred it.
Yeah. Really?
We're going to
struggle for content filling.
We're going to free up so much time in our listeners' days.
Yeah, this might be exactly what we need.
Maybe we need
a second tired of hour-long podcast.
Maybe it's time for vertical podcasting.
Dense 2 minutes worth of just...
Like a ginger shot. Pew!
Exactly.
Yeah, pow. Henry had an issue. You got wet camping one day. Right, I'm ready to face the day.
Yeah, comedy, done. News, done. Sport, done. Yeah?
Yeah.
History, done. Get it all done.
Time for relationships, done, actually. More and more these days with people spending so much time online and not actually connecting. So. Yeah?
Yeah, and that's something you might enjoy listening to when you go wild camping, as well as this extra content. About wild camping.
Or maybe not about wild camping, but recorded at the same time as when we talked about wild camping.
Correct.
So I've been trying different glasses on recently. Glasses have such an impact on the human face in terms of how you look.
Because what is your face shape is key. Have we talked about this before?
Yes. I am...
What is your face shape? Oval.
I'm like, if you got six peanuts...
Yeah.
Okay. If you imagine, you know, like the monkeys when they did album covers?
The band, right, yeah.
Henry's head is like, if you got six peanuts, gave them to a bloke on a stall and said, in return for these six peanuts, can I have a slightly elongated melon?
It's basically just freedom and economics, this place, isn't it? That's what we're looking at.
It's a bartering system, head shape.
Bartering head shape. I was going to say, if you got four peanuts and tried to do what, you know, the monkeys, when they did an album cover, they'll stand behind each other and stick their arms out.
Right.
So the monkeys.
Beg your pardon?
The monkeys or monkeys?
The monkeys.
Double E.
The monkeys. Okay. Yeah. Like that. But then the sort of four peanuts, but there's some sort of nuclear event happened, they got fused together.
Yeah. I can't picture the monkeys album cover, to be honest, so I'm all at sea.
It might not be the monkeys, but it doesn't matter. Anyway, imagine it.
But either way, the nuclear event sounds more pivotal, so the...
Yeah. So it's just four fused peanuts in a row, essentially.
Yeah.
Imagine a loaf of peanuts.
Mm. Are they still in their shell?
Well, I'd like to think they weren't, but thanks a lot, Mike. Cheers. Yeah, you made me feel great for the rest of the day now.
Textured face, like the outside of a monkey nut. I think it's because we call them monkey nuts. I got so confused about the monkeys, the band as well, with the peanuts and the nuclear reaction.
Yeah.
I think the thing with glasses is, Henry, is when you're standing there and you're trying them all on, it's an absolute kind of ego death, isn't it? Because it's like,
it really is.
Who do you think you are, basically, is what's happening there. It's not just, do these glasses look nice? It's like, who fundamentally are you?
Yeah.
Are you a round little glasses, little Belgian millionaire man?
Yeah.
Are you a sort of cool aviators man?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Are you a 90s snowboarder?
Yeah. Exactly.
Are you a Victorian colonial deathmonger with a nice little pair of pince-nez?
Are you a night ops US Marine about to conduct an incredibly high profile assassination behind enemy lines of a member of the Monkees?
Are you Elton John?
Are you Elton John?
I saw Mission Impossible yesterday. The family,
yes, which I am very excited to. I haven't seen that yet.
But we don't need to. We don't need to plug that.
No.
Well, you know what? It's Well, to be honest, I can't plug it because I thought it was fairly weak.
Oh. That's an extraordinary naysay, given the what I've been reading about it.
Yeah. Oh, really? Are people saying it's good?
Everyone's saying it's incredible, aren't they?
Well, it's not perfect.
Or is it just the stunts are incredible? But that's why you're going to see it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suppose, and we think about it this way. If I was to pour a gallon of ostrich piss onto your face, Mike, that would sort of be incredible, wouldn't it?
It would be incredible. I think it would get a decent number of hits.
It would get a lot of hits.
But, Henry, what if you poured a gallon of ostrich piss onto Tom Cruise's face?
Then you'd understand how he still looks so young, because I have been doing that fortnightly for the last 15 years.
Put it this way, Mike, you could comfortably miss the first third of the film, which is them all talking about whatever's meant to be happening.
Slow start.
There's no big stunts in the first third of the film.
Not really.
Surely it needs to start with something, right? The tail end of the last mission.
It's such a poor start. It's a really poor start.
It starts very badly.
So I think the problem with the film is there's loads of talking.
Yeah.
There's loads of flashbacks, which I just feel is literally a con. I mean, like, sorry, I'm paying for a repeat. Oh, yeah, the bit where he dangles in that room. You're fucking joking. You're showing me the room dangling scene.
Yeah, we're over it, man. Move
we're
on.
Over the room dangle, mate. Yeah? The media landscape has changed. I am now on a daily basis emotionally connected with a daughter.
All right?
Yeah. We're post-Snowden.
Basically, the first bit is them trying to make out that actually all of the Mission Impossible films are somehow linked, and it's all this big story, and we're about to see the end of this big story. But they've had to do that in retrospect. They spent so long trying to explain how everything's linked, and nobody cares.
No one gives a shit. Yeah. Jump off a fucking building, mate. I don't give a fuck, yeah? Try and ride a torpedo across the channel or something. Do something completely bonkers.
Do something that would definitely be unsurvivable, please.
Try and train an eagle to think that you're its child and get it to carry you through the channel tunnel.
And pull a beak off your face to reveal your own face.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you pull a beak off its face to reveal that it's Darth Vader and it's a film, it's a crossover movie.
Yes!
Come on! That's what I needed. But instead, it was just talking. Yeah. Flashing back to the previous films, like, no one cares. Literally, all I remember about these films is the action sequences. I'm not even joking. I genuinely do not even know what your character is called.
No,
I can't tell you to this day what your character. And the idea that there's some kind of emotional buy-in.
No.
What? Then there were these long emotional speeches about like, and because when people do things, they do them. If they do them enough and enough times in a row, then you can always say that you did an amount of things. And that's what it's like.
Probably got quite good at it.
And good at it, at doing it.
With the correct supervision.
They were trying to find some moral or meaning, but there isn't one. So they were just talking nonsense, trying to find some sort of meaning in the series. No one gives a flying fuck about the relationships. I'm sorry. In fact, it's actually quite a sort of dead, lifeless franchise. It was kind of reminding me, oh yeah, this is a kind of dead, it's kind of quite a dead thing, isn't it? Like, because it was flashing back to relationship moments and like the guy saying, we did things together, because if you do things enough, what is it, Ben? There's that line they keep repeating. You do it not for the people that are there.
Oh yeah, but the people you'll never meet.
Who are not there and who you will never meet. What are you... What the fuck are you talking about? You do it for the people you'll never meet.
Yeah.
What are you on about?
Forgot to register for the pub quiz in time and weren't able to compete. And they had to go to the saloon bar instead and play bar billiards.
But Mike, the good news is that then about a third of the way through, he goes to the bottom of the sea and goes inside a Russian submarine. And from there on in...
Great. Yeah. That we're off to really, the really good. Yeah. 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 And then there's another... Yeah. So as soon as it gets action, great, it's really good. But there's I also noticed another flaw in the franchise. Andre, I don't know if you noticed this, which is essentially before each action sequence, there's a long, quite boring sequence where like six or seven.
I know exactly what you're going to say. I know exactly what you're going to say. It's amazing.
There's one piece of, there's basically a soliloquy. There's one piece of dialogue. Yeah. One piece of, can you have one piece of dialogue? There's a sort of speech,
yeah,
which is just exposition. Which is saying how they're going to do the complex action sequence. And they've just divided it willy-nilly between, like, dealing cards between all the characters. Right, so you do that, but literally it's like, so you do that, but... So then you've got this weird thing where six people are sort of chipping in to one mega-sentence that they're all saying.
That they all understand.
Yeah.
Well, no, Mike, because that's what I find interesting, is that they mix together people who know and people who are realising at the moment, right? So Simon Pegg goes, so we have to go to the submarine. And then Tom Cruise goes, yes, but it was sunk 20 years ago.
No. So, Ben, I've got to slightly qualify that. He doesn't say yes. That's why it's mad. He doesn't say yes. It's not dialogue.
No, you're right.
So that's why we have to break into the submarine, a Russian submarine, a Gzhnezhny 973. And then someone else pitches in, designed to have over 17 missiles per square inch. And then someone else says, all encased in a gelatine cube.
Rich, creamy
fudge. Because, of course, it's sponsored by M&S, isn't it? It's the first corporate high street nuclear submarine. Like, everyone's chipping in.
But what I find weird, so most of them will know this, but then one person who's in the room doesn't know this and somehow just divines it.
Leading to a de-encrusting of the Earth's surface.
Yeah, like exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a kind of knowledge being acquired while speaking happens.
Yeah. That's the weird sort of tone that doesn't exist in real life.
Yeah. But they're all too famous, so they all have to have a line. None of them can turn up on the day and not have a line in the scene.
But
right?
but these sequences are so long in this film that you really start to notice. It's bizarre. It's like Pass the Parcel. Each one goes on and it comes, it's round to back to Simon Pegg again. Yeah. Now he's saying, leading to a crenellation on the inside of the torpedo tube. Yeah, allowing, and then releasing you into the anus of a giant crab. controlling the crab from the inside.
So they feel it's necessary to explain why it's dangerous to get into a submarine that's already been sunk and is sitting in the North Sea.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't have the confidence that the audience might be able to work out that looks high risk.
And then the other thing which happens repeatedly in the film is someone will say to Tom Cruise, the plan, some sort of plan will be laid out.
Yeah.
And then someone will go, that gives you less than a 1 in 6 million chance of surviving. Are you telling me that's the best you've got? And Tom Cruise just goes, yes. You know, that happens a few times.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what the character's name is called. You're flashing back to emotional moments. I literally didn't know what your fucking character's called, mate. Couldn't give a monkeys. It's a kind of dead-eyed. If you think of him as a character, it's a kind of dead-eyed, weird guy with these other dead-eyed friends who just get together and list information about something that's about to happen together. They sit around just listing information together.
When we left, my partner turned to me and went, so who was Gabriel? It was such a great question, because the baddie is a guy called Gabriel, but you've got, who is
that's
he?
A good point. Who was Gabriel?
He's just a man.
Gabriel was.
So they don't even cover the backstory of the arch nemesis?
No, he's just a man. He's okay. Just a bloke.
But he probably was in one of the 14 films 20 years ago.
That no one remembers or cares about.
Yeah.
The other bit that was quite funny, so these kind of dead-souled automaton characters,
yeah,
like there's no sense of gang or buddy movie or like or you know, like is there at all, Ben? There's no sense of warmth or like between these characters.
But hang on, because you've got he's the front man, Tom Cruise,
yeah,
and then he's got the guy who's like the computer engineering guy, and then you've got the other guy who's like the computer engineering guy.
Yeah.
And then a woman.
and then there's a woman. But they brought back a lot of the sidekicks, didn't they? So there was like three women, there was like three engineering guys, because a lot of the sidekicks, oh, I gathered were the sidekicks, I don't remember any of them, I gathered these were sidekicks from previous movies, including a woman who only spoke French, but she understood what everyone said.
And everyone understood her.
And everyone understood her.
Yeah.
It was like, she was French, but the Frenchness had no impact on
her.
So
there is a Star Wars crossover, because that's what they do in Star Wars. When people don't have the correct throats to speak Ulamanunu.
Then what do they do?
Eat my thought over that damn solo.
Yeah.
But don't they have subtitles for them?
Yeah, but the characters can't read the subtitles.
But it's like characters are somewhere reading the subtitles. But it was almost as if Frenchness was too much of a character trait for the writers to be able to sort of comprehend, so that she's French and has no impact. She says French things, people hear it in English, people say English things to her and she hears it in English, but she just, I don't know.
Anyway, Mike, you are going to absolutely love it.
Oh, I can't wait, yeah.
Yeah.
I already know.
It's great.
5 stars.
We've had an email. It's quite long. I've not read it yet, but I'm gonna do it, because the subject title is "The Girls Whose Bones I Shattered Twice."
Good Lord.
Okay.
Dear Three Bean Salad, after listening to Mike and Henry's stories about causing accidental injuries to their childhood friends, that was a while ago.
Yeah.
I thought I'd send you a little story of being a danger to my peers in primary school, specifically one poor girl whose bones I systematically shattered on not one but two separate occasions.
Oh, God.
It all began in the early years of school when our mutual best friend invented a ridiculous game where the two of us had to hug each other and sit down at the same time. The mechanics of this were doomed from the start, but as children we trusted in the magic of friendship. Unfortunately, gravity had other plans. I toppled over mid-hug, tangled up in limbs, and landed squarely on her leg. The teacher on yard duty, bless her, gave my injured classmate a piggyback to the sick bay, chirping, "It's fine, probably just a bruise." The next morning, she rolled into school in a wheelchair, leg in a full cast, so it wasn't just a bruise. Wow. To really cement my role as her personal nemesis, I managed to make things worse later that day. She decided to make the best of things by turning her outstretched cast into a game for the class, a makeshift horse jump.
Oh, come on. I mean, it's better than makeshift horse, which is where I thought it was going, but still, it's not good.
Yeah.
Everyone was leaping gracefully over her leg like tiny little Olympians.
She was too comfortable. Whoever put that plaster cast on and gave her analgesia had done too good a job.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
Until I, in my usual clumsy fashion, tripped mid-jump and crash-landed right on top of the freshly broken limb.
That's why you don't elect to do the horse jump over it in that situation. You sit it out. Just sit it out. Don't put yourself in that position.
Fast forward a few years, and I managed to break her finger.
What?
Oh, come on.
This time during an instant game that we called Cinder Block Boat Cruising.
Okay.
We were sat side by side with a cinder block between us, pretending to be at the back of a boat.
Right.
My important job was to start the engine by picking up the block and spinning it around. What is a cinder block?
Yeah.
Like a breeze block, isn't it? Like a massive brick.
Like a big sort
of
cement
brick. Is that what
they
call a breeze block in America?
Yeah. Just as I hoisted the thing up, she absentmindedly plonked her hand down right where the block was meant to go. I politely asked her to move. She was too busy chatting. I asked again. Nothing. At this point, my small child arms gave out and I dropped the block right onto her finger. Snap.
Oh. Good God.
We did somehow make it all the way through school together. Not exactly friends, but distant peers, connected forever by a shared history of playground-based orthopaedic trauma. Yours bone-crushingly, Fiona from Australia.
Good Lord, Fiona.
I've got a feeling that Detective Packer might be in the house.
Oh, really?
Oh, hello.
I'm not sure if these accidents were quite as accidental as they seem. And my key piece of evidence is the sound effect she said when she dropped the cinder block on the finger. She said snap. That's not a snap. That's a crush.
Mm, it's a squash.
Oh, interesting.
A snap is something that happens when she deliberately.
Yeah.
It's an active verb, I'd say, a snap. So luckily for Fiona, I have no legal jurisdiction anywhere on earth. And anything I said sort of...
But were Fiona ever to set foot in the city of London?
Yeah, then she'd better be careful. But juries hate this guy, so you're probably fine.
I want to know what Fiona does now. Does she do something where she's not a threat? It's probably not very many ways to make a living where you can't injure someone.
Hopefully she doesn't run one of those theme parks for kids where they go along ropes very, very high in trees.
Into cinder blocks.
Oh, she's now running Cinder Block World. No accidents for 7 hours.
Now it's time for us to go back into the editing suite and rummage in the boxes and the bits of tape and the old reels.
Not the editing room floor, isn't it? We always try and make that, because as soon as you go down an editing metaphor route, Ben, we end up talking about the cutting room floor, which is not what this is. If anything, it's the cutting room ceiling.
Yeah, it's too premium to go on the floor.
Stuff that was too premium to go on the floor.
Anyway, what I was trying to say was that in opening that cupboard to go back to this episode, to go back to the recordings, to find that gold that we left unpanned, moths might fly out of that cupboard. Might do, mightn't they? Moths?
Of unpanned gold, yes.
Yeah. Do you not pan gold?
You do, yeah. It's just there's a lot going on in this metaphor. But I think our listeners can...
Yeah. The whole thing's happening in a barbershop or not?
Yeah, that was impressive.
In hairdressers.
I don't think it was a metaphor. I think I was being completely literal. Okay. Apart from the bit about panning gold, which was a metaphor. But that's a well-worn metaphor, Mike. Don't tell me I can't say pan for gold.
You can absolutely say pan for gold. I would never stop you from saying pan for gold, but I wouldn't dream of it. Yes. Moths.
Some people on the Patreon, by the way, responded quite angrily to our moths episode.
I thought they might, because we were flagging moths off.
Why? Because they were
pro-moth.
Yeah, there's people saying, pro-moth. Moths are beautiful, and there's thousands of species of moths, and only two of them eat your clothes, and the rest of them are completely harmless.
I think moths probably are fine and, like, ethically quite decent people.
Is this a marketing issue again, is it?
But if anything, I'd like to widen the net, as it were, to encompass butterflies, as it were, literally, as they are, under the same umbrella as moths.
So many metaphors.
In the sense that I also don't like butterflies that much. And they've got great PR. Oh, they're in the summer, they flop around. Oh, they're all sweet and lovely and to do with cute things. They're disgusting. If you look them up close, they're just grotesque. The compound eyes, wet bits, glossy antennae, clippers, clunkers, all that.
But I mean, any living creature is like that. Any living creature, you get close enough.
If you got close enough to Scarlett Johansson, it'd be disgusting.
Yeah, yeah. Golly, that shut him up, didn't it?
How dare
he? I might remember that for future reference.
Are you saying that Scarlett Johansson's got compound eyes? I once ran screaming from a butterfly enclosure because I was in the middle of a butterfly enclosure when it suddenly occurred to me that they're just grotesque, horrible insects, like the most slimy cockroach or grotty earwig on earth, but just with some nice accessories stuck on in the form of their wings.
Good colour scheme.
The scales fell from my eyes and I realised what butterflies actually are. And I shouted, you fools, as I ran out.
Madly whipping your rolled up Guardian wherever you went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is quite precocious considering I was about 12. But yeah.
By the way, I think that's a crazy point of view. Butterflies are one of the most beautiful things in the animal kingdom and are absolutely transfixing in their beauty.
Team Butterfly all the way.
Anti-moth powder.
Anti-moth powder.
Anti-moth powder.
Are you talking about moths?
Yeah, we're talking about moths.
We're talking about moths, aren't we? Okay, moths. Oh, my God.
I haven't come across anti-moth powder. I think I've only come across the cedar ball and the...
Or, as I think they should be actually really accurately be called, the cedar balls. Because it's complete balls that seem to do anything about anything.
They do absolutely nothing.
And it's the same with moth balls. And, in fact, they had a meeting where they were like, hang on, aren't these all these products kind of balls? And the public are going to sniff that out, aren't they, and realise that everything we're selling is total balls. It's a lie. You cannot kill death.
No, I thought they were... In fact, you use cedar balls to keep away the moths. You keep oak balls to keep away the apothecary and his bills. Yeah?
Nothing that's balls can keep away anything.
Teak balls for black bile.
Bile balls.
Bile balls, yeah.
None of these things work. Mm. And that's why they've put balls in the title to try and confuse us.
Yeah, it sounds like, Mike, you're still very much in the kind of Edwardian.
We lean heavily on wooden balls, for the children's asthma. I mean, whatever's going on, you know. Guests overstaying their welcome. There's a wooden ball for it.
You crush them under a massive oak ball, don't you? A guest. Because what we do these days is you walk into the spare room and you go, do you want a cup of tea at 5:30 a.m. as a little clue to get the fuck out of my property? Do you want a cup of tea in bed? Ow, 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 don't pour the tea on my face. Sorry, I assumed you wanted tea on your face. Get the fuck out of my property.
Before my wife gets the mahogany balls.
Because, but that's what we do nowadays. It's aggressive. It's all done through microaggressions through the act of offering tea, isn't it? That's how you get someone off your
party
now.
So it's meals and snacks at the wrong time.
At the wrong time.
Or maybe like, would you like a tea? I'll leave it in your car.
I put a lasagna in your loafers, if you know what I mean.
By which I mean I literally have put lasagna in your loafers. So it works both physically and metaphorically. And you can. That's why lasagna.
And it doesn't work metaphorically.
Or physically, it turns out. It's really, really hard to get lasagna into some loafers. Yes, but before the microaggressions of tea offering, it was a large mahogany ball where you'd wake up in the spare room with your friend and you realise that your feet had been crushed off because the ball was gradually working its way up your body. You'd start by crushing the feet.
Yeah, and your wife had been varnished.
By that point, your wife has been varnished, and you just have to pray to God it's in a nice facial expression, because isn't it? But generally, it's the horror of being varnished is normally the facial expression, isn't it? So, if you're lucky, you'll get out of there with your upper body intact and your wife's face as a varnished keepsake.
A highly buffed wife.
Of course, the irony of that was that it's actually even harder to get away once your feet have been mahogany balled off.
Yeah. And you should probably still use a coaster on your wife, just because, even though it's been varnished.
Just for...
You can still get rings.
Is narrowboating, is that one of the only ways where you get to witness the world from slightly below ground level, don't you? Just slightly.
A foot, maybe sometimes even, 6 inches or so.
Yeah. But slightly below ground level.
Yeah, well, you could do if you were flush with the bottom of the boat, but obviously you usually stood on the boat, so actually you're viewing it from slightly above ground level.
Right. That must be quite confusing then. You have to sort of create an average, do you?
You've got exactly. It actually, your eyes and your brain even it out.
Naturally.
Yeah. It's a bit like binocular vision. It just sort of, you don't think about it, it just happens.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
But also, Mike's used to it, right? Because that kind of level off the ground on a narrowboat is very similar to if you're just standing on the back of a dog.
Yeah, which is a cheaper way to basically experience what a lot of people say is actually better than a canal holiday, don't they? It's just riding a dog around your garden for a bit. So were you all sleeping on the narrowboat then? And
Four of us in little little sort of bunks, quite nerve-wracking bunks, and the other two sort of converting the ends of the boats into beds. All very snug. Very snug, very wholesome.
It's funny, snugness isn't something I yearn for with my male friends.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I do like Mike and Ben, but if only I was more snug, if only I could feel more within their body warmth.
Yeah.
For long periods.
Now, this is the sort of thing where the corridor is so narrow, you can't, like, if you're trying to pass each other in a corridor, there's a lot of heavy, heavy, heavy pressing. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, both of you will change shape slightly to get past each other in the corridor. So it has to be a group of friends in which there's a minimum tacit consent to snug living.
And that's why people that spend a long time together on narrowboats, eventually it's called cashewing, the body cashews. Or your body will become a kind of complementary cashew to the other cashew shape of your co-narrowboat, where you can slip past each other.
Yes, and the stage after that is puttying, where you will turn into one sort of amorphous blob that then has to be reshaped at the other end.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or often that putty ends up just dissolving into the sort of the body of the narrowboat itself, adding to its
water
resistance.
Or can just be using some brickwork in a canal. Do you know what I mean? It can be just for repairs and things. Yeah.
But no, I am falling into the I am in a kind of dangerous place with my optician world, and it's a bit like, you know what? So weirdly, when we were off mic a minute ago, Ben was talking about how he's currently in it. This is like a thrilling insight into what do we talk about when we're not on air. Ben was must be something quite exciting, wasn't it? Must be something quite glamorous, probably about one of our showbiz friends. But Ben was talking about how you're in the process of changing car insurer, aren't you?
Yeah.
And they're making it quite hard for you to change car insurer, aren't they?
Well, they've cocked it up somehow, yeah.
But they can be quite emotional with you.
Yeah.
Or quite rude, yeah. Mike, you were saying. Or sometimes when you try and change internet provider or something, they can yes. turn on you a bit.
Mm, yeah.
Because what happens in that moment is you go from being a customer who they have to treat with this sort of reverence and, like, you know, that'll be part of their mission statement.
And that's what I do feel when I ring Virgin Media. A real sense of reverence.
You do feel like a very god, don't you? Whereas
they call me the Sultan.
They make offerings to you, don't they? Sacrificial offerings of increased bundles to you, don't they? And that's how they worship you. But when you leave, when you're on the verge of leaving, you're suddenly in this kind of space where you're suddenly turning into just some prick to them. Because if you're not making the money, if you're not a customer, then you really are the true surround sound, high definition, like fluorescently lit prick that you actually are. You're just a prick. Do you know what I mean? No, or at least to them, you're just a waste of their time. I'm teetering on that tightrope with my optician at the moment, because I won't go into it all again, but I'm considering changing optician. So on the one hand, he's treating me with the reverence that
you deserve.
The opticians always treat you with, don't you?
But you've got a major structural issue, haven't you, with your arms? I mean, you're a bit like a sort of an area of ground that's been sort of half developed. Someone managed to do the foundations, someone went bust and they left it for 10 years, sold it to someone else. And you sort of got
physical
that.
Body? You're talking about physical arms?
Well, yeah, it could work for your arms, but certainly with your glasses, there seems to be a lot of stalling. It's a sort of half structured. It's safe enough to be left outside under some canvas, but it's not been finished.
Yeah, they're not in a good place, most facts. But it's just, I'm just trying to decide who do I go with for that solution. So anyway, my optician, on the one hand, has been quite polite to me, but on the other hand, he occasionally shows me a bit of leg in the sense of, but leg that he's written on in felt tip, you're a prick on it. Because as soon as I say, I'm actually going to go to another optician, I know he's just going to go, you fucking prick, Henry. You fucking have made my life hell, you absolute fucking prick. And then I say, no, sorry, what I meant was I'm going to change the type of glasses I get from you, the same optician.
I just call my glasses my optician. out of reverence to you.
And that's why, Henry, I'm calling you a prick, because I... Like a thorn, you have pricked me and blinded mine eyes, and I have been reborn, pricked by the glorious thorn of Pacadonia. Pacadonia. Yeah. So it's a massive emotional journey for him.
Do we mean if you've also been pricked by the glorious thorn of Pacadonia? We've also had an email from Jane. I liked hearing about Henry's experience at forest school camps, and it reminded me of my own excretory incidents with this organisation.
Okay, there's a pattern forming. This is going to be the next case for the Guardian investigative unit, isn't it? This is the next big tribunal.
What forest school camps did to all of our colons.
But first, some context. My brother was a devotee, going every summer from 7 years old till he was 18. In the 70s, it was very popular with middle-class progressive parents who naively thought it was a good idea to release the kids from the shackles of school routine and London suburbia by letting them experience the countryside within the reassuring structure of an organisation that required all items to be clearly named and which divided children to cutely named cohorts. Elves for the 7-year-olds, through to trackers, trail finders, and finally the 18-year-old pathfinders.
Good stuff.
All the other kids were deeply middle class and often called Orlando. My mother was enchanted by the fact that she sent off my brother on his first trip with a bar of soap with his name carved on, and he returned a week later with the embossing untouched by any wear. In reality, at least during the 70s, the camping trips were really just a chance to consume drugs and alcohol with abandon and discover sex. I rather think it was this, and not fresh air and countryside, which was the attraction for my brother.
This is for the Pathfinders.
Yeah.
I certainly wasn't invited to any of those, tents.
I'm surprised Henry couldn't explain the cat lat. We were told at Forest School that the form for shitting in public was to dig a hole and then cover it up with soil, like a cat does to hide its presence from predators.
Oh, wow.
Not paying attention.
Not That's paying attention. Bad. So I even shat on the ground wrong.
Sixty years ago today, It was the middle of the 60s.
Is that right?
Which is no coincidence.
Although it is a coincidence.
Well, it actually is completely a coincidence. Because we did an episode all about the 60s, didn't we?
And in about 60 seconds, you're going to hear some more stuff about the 60s.
But probably not 60 things about the 60s.
And also this stuff might not be about the 60s. It's just stuff that we discussed during the episode where we were supposed to discuss the 60s.
Culture, politics, history.
Yeah, we basically didn't mention the 60s at all. And we talked quite a lot about the 50s in my memory.
I think so, yeah.
Elvis Aaron Presley. Yuri Aaron Gagarin. Mary Aaron Quant. And Mick Aaron Jagger. All of them featured in the 60s. You betcha. Britain, for me, it's made up of Postman Pat style hills where... The hills are so perfectly sort of rounded that as you go across them, your sort of head, as you walk up one of them, your head is initially
You're almost certain to get a head-on collision with someone coming the other way.
Yeah. Well, there's no depth to it. It's made up of two 2D completely round hills. But also, as you go around them, you're like a sort of clock arm going round, like your body face is perpendicular to the sort of centre of the, in quite a sort of lovable way. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So cars and stuff, they kind of...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They sort of go over and... around these hills and stuff.
And for people abroad who don't know what Postman Pat is, in the 80s, it was like our version. It was like The Wire.
It was the British Wire. Yeah, it was the British Wire. Yeah, it's such a universal trope. We've both gone for it. Yeah. But instead of Agent Scully, who was a disaffected policeman, wasn't he? Is that right? In The Wire? Or is that The X-Files? Yeah.
Both, same thing.
Mulder. No.
Yeah, The Wire was a spin-off, wasn't it?
That's right. What was...
Because it can't all be aliens. Sometimes it's got to be drug dealers, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The only character I can remember from The Wire is Officer Presbulowski. Is that someone?
I don't know, but it's plausible.
Presbulowski?
Was he the one who... Well, there was a guy who went, she.
Oh, yeah, he was great. Who is played by, who's that posh actor from Britain?
Dominic Watsit.
Dominic Watsit, that's yeah, right. West. Who is he playing?
Well, he's the heir of the Watsit fortune. He doesn't need the money.
He definitely had it. He had an Irish name. It was very deliberate.
He was McNulty.
McNulty, oh, yes. That's it.
Played by one of the most toffee-gobbed aristocrats in the country, isn't it? Who will never have to. We never has to make a meal, does he? Because he never has to buy food because he just eats Watsits. He's got the ancestral vaults, hasn't he? That are full of. If that was someone's stomach, they're about to die. If it was Pam needs to see a vet.
I think it's because you're attacking the aristocracy.
Yeah, of course.
That's what she thinks.
Well, she's an old hunting dog, isn't she? That's her stock.
Exactly. Yeah.
Pam, it's all right.
So Pam's now wrapped around Mike's right leg.
Yeah.
Like an 80s style leg warmer with a face. No, so just quickly, McNulty was a bit like an episode of The X-Files in the sense that it was this kind of eerie universe where it was the sort of drugs and cops scene of Baltimore, but just one of the most sort of hard hard-bitten American cops just didn't have an American accent. No one ever talks about it, though. Yeah.
One of them was a public school boy in his late 30s on a gap year.
Yeah. But never came up. But he still had a problem with the bottle. He still had a problem with the people at City Hall. He had all this stuff, which you'd expect someone on the gap year between Eton and, Oxford. But really bedded in. It's amazing. That's why gap years, were such an important thing, weren't they? They
don't have that generation. Do you know what I mean? You can't. It's much harder now for the young generation just to take a year off and get a leading role in a major HBO series.
It
just doesn't happen.
They have to think long term about their careers now, don't they? They can't think, oh, I'll be a hard bitten Baltimore cop for a year. And then go on to work for Lehman Brothers.
But he can't work for Lehman Brothers anymore. That's really hard.
That's what I mean. It's harder and harder.
I'm talking about the Lehman Brothers Crab Shack. They had to consolidate the entire merchant bank down
into secret sauce.
Down into one crab shack with a secret sauce.
Where you can buy futures of crab.
That's right.
So you can buy a crab roll in the future.
In the future.
But at the price of today.
Yeah. And that sauce, that's the sweet, sweet taste of pensioners' tears.
Anyway, I was trying to explain what Postman Pat is or
yes.
was.
Oh, yeah.
He was an avuncular postman in a children's TV show, and he would deliver posts around the place, and then they'd get into there'd be problems, wouldn't there?
Mm.
He did get a scrape, but he was
stuck in a road.
Yeah, he was avuncular. He was a confirmed bachelor. He was the nation's moral compass, I would say.
Oh, he's a dickless king.
Yeah, which is... is often, I think, by political scientists has been thought to be that actually the perfect form of government, isn't it?
So you take a postman, you cut their dick off.
You make a dickless king. Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's one up from benevolent dictator. It's the dickless king. It's the most effective way to rule the human species.
Is that a thing, dickless king? Is that a phrase that I'm supposed to know about?
No, not really. It's just saying that he's totally smooth down there.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what
he has no sexuality.
And he behaves as such as well, which I think is a great relief to the people of the Yorkshire Dales. They don't want to be harassed by a horny postman, do they?
But also, you've opened up a really interesting area, which is, do characters like Wallace and Gromit, are they actually anatomically are they anatomically correct, do you think?
Well, have they made Wallace a dick? Is that what you're asking?
Well, you're saying he's smooth down
there. Tower of London for you, mate.
I think it's implicit that Wallace is a sexual creature.
Do you reckon?
Which one's
he? A love interest.
Oh, that's true.
But he definitely has a love interest in at least one of the films. He gets a bit dewy-eyed over
the
plasticine lady.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Have they ever made a version of Gromit with, like, eyelashes that's the female Gromit?
I don't remember, but it feels like an open goal, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
I mean, the nation wants its Lady and the Tramp moment with Gromit, for sure.
Normally, in the sort of cartoonified universe, dogs all fancy poodles. So it would be a poodle. The love interest would be a poodle.
In fact, maybe Gromit has fancied a poodle.
Probably
that's
has.
True. And normally the poodle would be the pet of the woman that Wallace has fallen for. That's when it's really tidy, when you get to the end and they're all snuggled up, eating their Wensleydale in the living room together. Around the
having had an interspecies of awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's implied, isn't it?
A Wensleydale fueled.
A Wensleydale fueled orgy. Oh.
Which Postman Pat would be completely unmoved by.
Yes.
Because all he wanted to do was deliver mail while going around hills with his centre of gravity being sort of linked center to the centre point of that hill so that he'd go around it in that specific way that I'm really struggling to describe.
Like the sort of sprocket of a wheel.
Sprocket? Like the sprocket of a wheel.
Sprocket? No.
I don't think sprocket's the right word.
No, it doesn't feel like it at all.
Like the sort of the handle of one of those wheels on a ship.
The helm?
The helm wheel.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Those handles would move around it perfectly. Yeah. But yeah, I suppose that's how I see the UK in a way. It's a mixture between that... and the credits of Antics Roadshow. So again, it's mainly just hills and sort of lovable genitalless people travelling around those hills in old-fashioned cars.
So hopefully that clears it up for people in case they were wondering what Postman Pat is, if they can remember what we were talking about in the first place.
But it's because they're so, because they could hurt you and they don't. It made this one all the cuter that it chosen to be a guide dog. I assume that's
his A-levels. Are you good at working with people? Do you prefer to work with your paws? What are your interests?
Do you fancy an international life of crime?
Do you want to be in a film about the Nazis?
Do you want to work as a personal assistant for Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber? But he is very handsy around dogs.
I think we do have to put a lid on this sense we're building that Andrew Lloyd Webber is sort of,
a dog perv.
It's a sort of dog perv, yeah.
Well, it's got to end somehow, hasn't it, all this?
Yeah.
Might as well be going to the High Court. Andrew Lloyd Webber's, Andrew Lloyd Webber's legal team.
I've got a feeling when it comes to long-term litigation, Andrew Lloyd Webber will bury us all, don't you think? Just in terms of the sheer patience of the man.
Oh, yeah, he'll still be suing us after he dies somehow.
Yeah, he'll set up an estate and a fund. There'll be generations of people that are just employed to keep suing us after we're dead and after they're dead and after everyone's dead. It'll be a litigation that's visible from light years away on other planets.
Now, we know for a fact that if you watch too much television, your eyes will go square. But what shape will your ears go if you listen to too much extra content from Three Bean Salad?
I was going to say bean shape, but the ear hole is already kind of bean shaped.
So maybe it's a safe option.
Do you mean you can't listen to too much Three Bean Salad?
I think so.
Sounds
think
like it, doesn't it?
I think that's what I'm suggesting, which is good because that's what's about to happen, is they're about to listen to too much Three Bean Salad.
From an illustrator's point of view, I can say that ears are quite challenging to draw well. Mm-hmm. But my little tip is just relax. Go with the flow because no one actually really checks.
Mm. Quentin Blake says ears are easy peasy. In fact, he even says easy peasy.
Oh, damn him! Damn him to hell!
That's his family motto.
Right, so here's more stuff from our recording that we made about old wives' tales.
Indeed.
So I was recently on holiday in France, and I went into my bedroom one night and there was what appeared to me to be an absolute mega moth crawling over the light bulb.
The eagle moth.
It felt like it was an eagle moth. Mm. And I just sort of fixated on it visually, and it just looked heinous to me because I just don't like insects. Just all the antennae and the furry bits, the little clippers and the little dangly bits and the little sort of I don't like hairy claws.
The bonus features.
I don't like the bonus features. I don't like sort of knees that go the other way.
Yeah, knees that go the other way. You don't like a creature that seems to be upholstered in the 70s style, do you?
I don't like that.
Mm.
I think one pair of legs, okay. Two pairs of legs, okay, if it's attached to a wet-nosed, friendly mammal.
Mm-hmm.
Dog, donkey, cat, giraffe. But six legs, fuck off, mate. It's just 70s sci-fi, isn't it?
Two of those legs are only there to cause trouble, aren't they? You can't possibly need all six.
I don't like the idea of regurgitating onto your food so that you can externally digest it.
Mm-hmm. Creatures that shouldn't have sort of fur or hair, but do have fur or hair.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like compound eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the fact that when something's a baby, it's a kind of pupa, and then it sort of is covered in like slime and spit.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns into something that has only one purpose, which is to reproduce. I don't like the way that they've separated the phases. Birth phase, eating phase, reproduction phase, having a dump phase. Mm. I think all those things should be woven together into the weft of life, like they are for us.
Because we're having a dump from moment one.
That's not how you think of your day.
Well, that is how I think of my day. All of that stuff happens in it. But I didn't like the idea that, you know, I have to section out my whole life like that.
Each one is a one-off. Yeah,
I got really freaked out by it.
Did you work out what it was?
It was that. It was all it was a moth, and then sort of calmed down. And I sort of saw.
It wasn't a pigeon the size of a moth.
It wasn't a pigeon. It wasn't a pigeon the size of a moth.
Okay,
which is actually weirdly more terrifying. But I have a problem, which is that I can only go to sleep reading.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be reading my Kindle with the light on in its screen.
Mm-hmm.
What I have to do is I have to turn all the lights off. I read my Kindle, which has a light in its screen, until I fall asleep. That's how I get to sleep. I don't have any other way of getting to sleep, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is if I'm in a room with a moth, I'll be reading my Kindle, going off to sleep, marvelling at the complexity of Tolstoy's brain. And knowing that feeling in a way that me and Tolstoy are intellectual lovers.
Across the ages.
And he is getting just as much out of this as I am. I genuinely believe that.
And you are going at Tolstoy like a sewing machine.
word, sentence, paragraph, word, page, chapter, word. But then what happens is I start to nod off. And as I'm nodding off, a moth lands on my Kindle and I have the, relatively speaking, optical illusion of a giant moth silhouette right in my face. Every dangler, every antenna, every hairy bit sort of like embossed in like black silhouette onto my retina. So, and often it'll be just quite a small one, but it's silhouetted, projected right onto my face, into my brain that's just starting to nod off when you're very susceptible to ideas, very susceptible to horror.
Me and Henry went for a meal yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a nice moment at the end where they brought out some fudge.
Yeah.
So when you got the bill, they'd bring you 2 cubes of fudge.
Mm.
Mm.
And it was really nice fudge. Like, normally fudge is absolutely rubbish, but this was actually quite good, wasn't it?
Normally fudge is rubbish, which is why there's a sort of cult around it, which is you go into town centres around Britain. And there'll be people on the street going, "Oh, you want that fudge kitchen? Come in the fudge. It's free fudge. You want 5 fudges? Free fudge. It's fun fudge. Yeah. Hey, it's good fudge. You want some fudge? Fudge. You know, like, do you know what I'm talking about?
It's too intense. Yeah.
There's a kind of aggressive culture, sort of cult-like thing around fudge, which I think is there because the product is like bad cake or some sort of failed.
Yeah.
In a confectionery
failed
factory,
pre-cake
isn't it?
Or something.
Failed pre-cake.
So where was this? What kind of restaurant would give fudge at the end instead of your after dinner mint or what have you? That's interesting.
Well, we went to a sort of ye olde Dickensian...
Ye olde chop house.
Oh, really?
Chop house.
Oh, nice.
Mm. On the hottest day of the year, which was quite a...
It was pork chop weather.
Chops and fudge.
It was chops and fudge.
Chops and fudge and weak ale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's been there since 1861 or something.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we actually went for a crisp rosé.
We did have a crisp rosé.
Lovely.
But they brought out the fudge, and it was nice fudge. And Henry... I don't know why Henry said this. He said... How is fudge made to the server? And then because it was quite a nice place and it's kind of quite a nice service, the server sort of took it upon himself to go and speak to the chef and find out how it's made.
Did you find that embarrassing?
No, I found it highly amusing.
You didn't point this out at the time. You thought, I'll keep this weapon for the... do it in front of the British public. I'll knife him deep for this. right between the ribs and into an important organ.
So then he came back and he said, oh, and you have to boil cream and you have to... And Henry had to sort of feign interest in how you make fudge.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. Cause
that's sad, isn't it, anyway?
I didn't want to know as much as I thought I did when I asked.
It wasn't your fault. You were doing nice small talk.
Or it's strange small talk. The tragedy is that if you were 10 years old and you'd asked that, people would have gone, how lovely. How interesting. An interesting, lovely child who's genuinely interested in the process. But when it's a fully grown man,
Can I say, Mike? I actually have that a lot. That's quite interesting.
Mm. Your behaviour would be acceptable for a 10-year-old boy.
Mm.
Mm. But isn't for a fully grown man.
Mm. It's really interesting, isn't it?
It's interesting.
Sometimes I do things which are appropriate for a 10-year-old boy that we're all a bit worried about.
Mm-hmm. Trousers around your ankles when you have a wee in a public place. Yeah?
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah. For some reason, I thought he was the chef.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, because he was talking...
Did you think it was one of those places where the chef comes out to...
Maybe.
...present their chops?
Yeah, because he was chatting. Something about the way he was chatting. For some reason, I sort of decide. I think because the kitchen was very close, I could see the kitchen. Because he hadn't taken our orders.
Our waiter had clocked off, so he'd
Yeah.
That's why it was confusing.
So I thought it was a shape. And as soon as I said that, I said how is fudge made?
Mm.
I thought, oh, he's going to love this because he's a chef and, you know, he can share his knowledge. But it probably won't take too long because I imagine fudge is a pretty simple process.
It was the perfect question for the chef.
Perfect question. It was a perfect small talk to make with the chef.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the chef.
It was the right question at the wrong time.
Yeah. Also, I also thought that it was the kind of place where like everyone would be proud and know about the food or something. I don't know. I just totally screwed up. And he had to go off and find the information about...
Mm.
And then he made a joke about brown butter that I didn't get.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we were talking about how unhealthy fudge is. Also, you know, it's all...
Well, he said the way fudge is made, the ingredients in fudge is sugar, mm-hmm. cream, brown butter...
Mm-hmm.
And there was something
and white
else.
Chocolate, I think, was in
and white one. Chocolate. That was what got into their fudge.
Mm.
And I went, "Oh God, those are the most unhealthy ingredients ever! Please get me the fuck out of here."
And he made a joke, which was, "Well, no, this is the healthy version because it's brown butter,
like brown rice." And I went, "Oh, really?" And then he went, "No."
I mean, it was a bad joke.
Such a failed interaction. You know, we were misreading. We were just ships in the night. We just misread. Nothing quite worked. We just misread every little. It was kind of. Until we started locking lips, and then suddenly we were both speaking the same language. The language was called sex. Wasn't it?
Decimating their 5-star hygiene rating.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, albeit only speaking that language at a very basic, sort of A1 transactional tourist level.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Can you show me the way to the Old Town Hall? But in sex.
I enjoy playing ping pong with my brother. But in sex.
But in sex.
So that's Extra Beans. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting us on Patreon. It means a lot.
Yeah.
Yes, it certainly does. It's crucial. Thank you.
And if you didn't enjoy it, there's really nothing we can do, is there? I suppose just apologise. But we're going to keep on chugging it out, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe write to the Ombudsman.
Exactly. Yep.
All right, bye.
Ellis James. Ta-ra.
Thank you, bye.